And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, this is Andrew Schlecht.
And I am Alex Spears.
And you can join us every Saturday on the Athletic NBA Show for the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
We will bring you the most interesting plots and storylines from the playoffs, fun guests, and a weekly trivia show where I attempt to completely embarrass my co-host, Andrew.
So grab your coffee, do your chores, and turn up the Saturday Slammin' Jam right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Roger, TV circuit breakers in. Base 5 square.
Roger.
And we're getting a picture on the TV.
I don't know why you said that almost like a Joe Pesci character. Very
aggravated. It's funny. Like you said it like you didn't. You've never heard Jade's voicemail. That's how you said it. Am I right?
No, you're right. I was doing a standard voicemail. I didn't know that you were actually doing the Jade voicemail.
That's Jade's voicemail. Hello, you're rich, Jade. That's how you say
it. I like your limited Jade. I like your Henry Abbott True Hoop TV is the other one I like.
Welcome to True Hoop TV. True Hoop TV.
It almost sounds a little like a Reggie Miller, just at a slightly higher frequency.
Henry?
A little bit in my brain.
Not at all.
Reggie Miller in my brain just sounds... I don't even know. It almost sounds, wow, gazoinks. That's what he sounds like in my head.
There is an element of Reggie that always sounds like he is censoring himself at the last minute with the leave it to Beaver euphemism. Golly gee willikers. Like he wasn't, god damn. Like, oh, I mean, golly gee willikers. What are you doing, Reg?
I mean, it's amazing. People would be so scandalized, I think, if they ever spoke to half the announcers on League Pass, local announcers, especially just the older avuncular. If you heard Jim Barnett, for instance, telling stories about the 1970s NBA in the way that he would tell it actually in real life, I've said it before, but I feel like it would be disturbing. It would be disturbing to so many Warriors fans. I don't think they could handle it.
Yeah, no, I talk about this all the time, like where people like Waz or Trey will tell me, yeah, my friends were like, yo, fucking hate that Amin guy, whatever. And then like they're like, yo, he's really cool. like that, their perception of it. Or people who like know me from ESPN and then listen to Bomb or Cinephobe like, he's cursing so much. Like, do you guys think like I talk like I kind of feel like it vibes off of me that I curse a lot even when I don't curse, but apparently not. Apparently people had like misconceptions dashed.
I don't know. It's funny. We all have a little bit of that. It's almost like when you see your teacher outside the classroom at the whatever store and people go, you don't exist in this context. Yeah. This can't be. This can't possibly be. I mean, I'm in my own mind, I'm like mulling whether to repeat some Jim Barnett stories specifically, but I will not do that. I don't think that's fair to JB, especially now that he's retired, to get him aggregated. And to be clear, a prince of a man when I've dealt with him. I'm not saying that he's a bad guy. I'm just saying that's a dude who would tell you some real grimy 1970s oh, yeah. NBA stories.
Man, that's uncensored, grimy. Those are the best people to talk to, by the way. Anyone who played in the NBA in the 70s, because the 80s by then, it was like people like want to talk about the 80s by then, it was like cleaned up. Like the 70s is where the shit was the shit, right?
Oh, free love. There's no AIDS. Nobody knows anything about that. I mean, it's a different world.
You're kind of giving it.
What? Making the subtext text?
Yeah. I was like, nobody cared about AIDS. Like, okay, now I got Jim Barnett, like, just banging a hooker raw dog. Condoms are for sailors.
Just trying to think of, I mean, that's not a story I've been told, but I'm trying to think the Jim Barnettisms that would be used in such a story. Better that than Bob Fitzgerald.
No.
Do it again! Do it again!
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome to the House of Strauss podcast. We are joined by Amin El Hassan, most favored guest. You know how they have trading partners with nations, most favored trading partner. I feel that way about Amin. Obviously brought to you by super producer Jade Hoy. Amin, an exciting playoff so far. Yeah, are you entertained? Are you not entertained? Are you memeing about Cameron Payne?
Yes, I am memeing about Cameron Payne. I'm glad that you brought that up. I thought it would do a lot better. It didn't. It got great traction on Instagram. Twitter wasn't really. I don't know. I guess like everyone likes Cameron Payne on Twitter, and they just didn't. They weren't really with it. But yeah. No, I'm excited. It's been fun. I thought last night was very fun.
We'll get into that, but I actually am a little fascinated by this because I don't have that sensibility of memeing. I don't know how to do it. At some level, I just don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm permanently old. What's interesting to me about it sometimes is that you know what's being communicated, but even I as a writer cannot articulate it. Like what's going on in a facial expression, why it connects, why it hits. You did something with Cameron Payne where it was when I see my crush. What was it? Let me see. Every time I see my crush and she sees me and I say, hey, and you have Cameron Payne's face. And it works, and I know why it's funny. I can't articulate it. What is that?
Well, you don't notice the saliva. Like that was the moment.
So maybe that's the facial expression.
Maybe that's why I didn't catch traction. Now I get it. Now,
yeah.
For people who watched the game, there was a shot where he's running back. Up the floor after hitting a shot or whatever, and he's like kind of like really excited, like let's go and whatever, and then there's a huge gob of spit just comes flying out and slobbering out of his mouth, and I was like, yo, I've been there before, where like the exact moment people look at you is fucking not flex spittle, I'm talking about like full-on slobber has just evacuated your mouth en masse, right? And I'm like, oh, it's always the worst. And like, I thought about Cameron Payne, like of all the times for them to have a tight shot of his face. That was the moment when the split just came blobbing out. And that was what inspired the meme.
The problem is with the freeze frame, you might think it's a little bit of glare. Like you don't necessarily know. So I interpreted it totally differently. I thought it was the look was sheepish. That's what I thought was happening. I had no idea. I had no idea it was about spit. In this, you know, podcast, it's a very visual medium. This is what we're beginning with. But no, I'm just always interested in why things resonate, why things connect. Some people have a certain just knack for it. Josiah, for instance. I mean, he's just got
He's legitimately the best the best at least at sports. I can't speak for like people who create memes like on the regular for all types of other shit, but I know when it comes to sports, Josiah is the best without peer for two reasons, right? One is they're always funny. Like I've never seen a Josiah one that wasn't funny. And I think that's an underrated one, because a lot of these people are swinging and missing out here. This dude's batting damn near 1,000. But I think the other thing that Josiah does is he does it fast. Like, before you've even had a moment to process what happened, he's pulled, and he does a different thing, right? Like, what I did last night was I took a picture of something that was happening now, and I came up with a funny caption. Josiah will take a situation, come with a pop culture reference video or screenshot of something from pop culture, from anything over like 50 years, really. And I also add a funny caption to it. It's like the degree of difficulty for what he's doing is out of this world. And that's why he's the best.
Yeah. And playoffs is when he really shines. But I've got to give a mention to our guy, Jerome, Black Dragon Roll.
Yes.
He went totally viral. That was yeah. ridiculous. If you're listening, you might have seen it. Basically the way it starts out, it's this immediately after the Hawks upset the Sixers, humiliate the Sixers, and it's this montage that starts out, and you see Trae Young and maybe a couple other Hawks, like Gallo, pointing at his jersey, and the Welcome to Atlanta is coming on, and it's building. That's a fun song. That's exciting. You're starting to get excited about a Hawks win-in montage. And also he throws in a little bit of sad Sixer fan and Ben Simmons, and you're getting excited. And then he shifts it to the Rick roll. And I hadn't even thought about, what's that guy's name? How do you pronounce his last name?
Rick Astley. This is your cousin, Marvin. Marvin Astley. Remember that piece of shit sound you were trying to come up with? Well, listen to this. That's from Family Guy, of course.
Well, Kevin Herter has a resemblance to old Ricardo Astley, and so it becomes a Rickroll. I mean, I'm explaining a meme. This is probably excruciating to people, but I need to explain it to talk about it.
But the reality is, once again, like, that's what made Jerome's meme brilliant, because he took something that happened, he subverted it, like the Welcome to Atlanta. Of course, Atlanta just won everything. But then he flips it with the Rick roll, which of course was a thing, right? The idea, like, you watch something, oh no, it's just Rick Astley again. But then on top of that is the guy actually looks like Rick Astley. So it's like layers on layers. Like, this is how you do it well, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. That was brilliant. Well, I'm wondering, because by the time people listen to this, we have not seen game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. There have been two games of the Western Conference Finals, which is weird at the moment we're talking. But I still want to dwell on the past. I mean, I feel like these series, these conference finals, they haven't ripened yet like a nice cheese. You know, we're still waiting for some things to really percolate. And I can't get over the Sixers. I can't get over them. And it seems like it's going to be relevant in the offseason. And I want your takes on the whole thing. First, basic question, Ben Simmons, would you trade for him?
Depends. It depends on who I am and depends on what I have to give up. But the general answer to the question is absolutely. Like, I've said this 100 times. I'll say it one more time. He literally can never get better. He could, if he just stops right now, this is as good as he'll ever be. And he does this for like 7 or 8 more years. He's a Hall of Famer. I don't give a fuck what he shot from the free throw line in the playoffs. I don't care that he passed up the dunk. I'm not defending those things. I'm not saying that's okay. But I'm telling you, the body of work he's going to amass, being just this good, is Hall of Fame worthy. He's fucking really good. Don't get it twisted. Now, are there things that he's got to get better at? Absolutely, right? And most important among them is aggression. Because I think we can live with you not being able to shoot, but we can't live with you being afraid to shoot. And that's a major difference right there.
Oh, it's such a great point by Shaq on Inside. And Inside these playoffs is fantastic. But the difference between him and Giannis is that Giannis kept going and kept attacking despite the embarrassment.
Right. There's a couple of things. One is Giannis kept going despite the embarrassment. That doesn't speak a whole lot about Giannis's shot selection within that. Like, we can definitely nitpick that. But at the end of the day, the aggression is still there. But the other part of it is, and I wish Shaq had approached it like this. Shaq is, there's no one more qualified to talk about this than Shaquille O'Neal. The idea of, I'm not good and I'm not great at that place and that's not my comfort zone. But it's not, that fear isn't going to stop me from playing my game. And that's the big difference. The difference is Shaq shot 50% from the free throw line and he went to the free throw line 20 times and he tried to dunk everything. And he was trying to get that ball up on the rim every single time. And Ben Simmons has now made it a point to, like, try to avoid getting fouled. And that's the fundamental, like, that's the point of no return, really.
Well, it looks like, from the outside, that a fear of looking bad.
Oh, shit.
Hello? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like all of a sudden you're calling over the phone. Or is that just, that might be me. Is it? Yeah. Damn. Okay,
now I sound pristine better to my own ears. I'm a little biased. Okay. It does seem like almost a self-fulfilling prophecy of fear of looking bad causes you to look bad versus, I mean, there is this skill-based aspect to it. He's not a great free throw shooter. You have your ups and your downs, but it seemed like if he was just a little less embarrassed by it, he could power through, but the embarrassment is causing him more embarrassment.
Yeah, and I think that's – and not only that, but apparently – based on his comments and also based on the reporting around it, he doesn't want to admit he has a problem.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't want to be flippant when I compare it to alcoholism, but imagine if, you know, like, if he recognized it was an issue, he could get better, right? But imagine if you got a guy who came and passed out at his sister's wedding. And before he did that, he threw up on the wedding cake and, like, pissed himself in the middle of the dance floor in front of everybody. And then afterwards, oh, I had a stressful day, man. So, I mean, I did pay for the reception, didn't I? I didn't hear a thank you there. You're welcome for that. Like, yeah, I get it. You are an elite defensive player, perhaps the best defensive player in the league. You are elite at playmaking. You are elite at rebounding. You're a great player, but to assume that all of that makes up for you throwing up on the wedding cake and pissing yourself as you play pass out in the middle of the dance floor in front of everybody at the wedding reception, like, clearly you don't get you have a problem.
Well, and I think he gets it, but there's this fear to admit it. I think sometimes when your ego...
Admit it to us or admit it to him? Because the reporting, that's why I said the reporting makes it seem like this is consistent. He doesn't think he has a problem. Like, I don't know if you read Yaron Weitzman's write-up.
Oh, that was great. I read that. That was excellent. Yeah. I think it was on Fox Sports, and it gave a lot more context to it. And just the coaching staff, somebody saying, what has he improved at? Nobody being able to say anything. And also some of what Simmons has said to Weitzman. Weitzman's asked about him. I asked him about these issues. I found it very fascinating. I do think this kind of thing happens. I'm playing armchair. Is it psychologist? It's armchair something. It's armchair something. We're just guessing. We're just guessing at the dynamics here. I think sometimes when you're emotionally invested in being good at something, it's hard to admit that you have flaws. And it feels threatening. I mean, it's something you've been good at your entire life. Simmons, he was in that that academy down there in Australia, right? Before coming to the U.S. I mean, he's basically a child star. So much of his identity has to be built around being good at this. And to be told that you have a glaring flaw, I think, is a threat. It's threatening. And ultimately, it's something that in order to get better, you need to know that about yourself. And you need to accept it. You need to know, hey, man, you got to jump off that diving board. You've got to do that uncomfortable thing of acknowledging that you have that. But that's tough. That's really tough for somebody who's, I think, brought up in this. So I'm not excusing it. I think it would be way better for his trajectory if he could admit it to himself. But I think at some level he knows, he's got to know. And there is an element of him trying to protect himself from the knowledge that's hurting him.
Right. I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot going on there. But having said all that, to go back to your original question, would I trade for him? Absolutely. So I was on SiriusXM NBA Radio with Rick Kamla, and Rick Kamla was talking about, like, oh, would Portland move CJ McCollum for him? I'm like, what are you talking about? What are we talking about? Like, they're not even in the same zip code. Like, would Portland do it? Fuck yeah, Portland would do it. And then Rick Kamla tried to convince me that CJ McCollum was a better basketball player than Ben Simmons. And I'm just like, and this is where we're at. This is where we're at, because I'm shocked. We had callers call in. I'm like, whoa, like, this is a thing people actually believe. And I love CJ. I don't want this to turn into me belittling CJ or anything like that. I love CJ. I think he's a great scorer. I think he's a great teammate. I think he's a guy that can help a championship team get over the hump. But like, if CJ makes an all-star game, that'll be like the height of his career. And like, if Ben Simmons doesn't make five more, we'll be surprised. There's a huge, huge gap. There's a gulf.
Well, in terms of upside, definitely. Like, I don't know. I'd have to really think about it. If you're talking about today, who do you want in a playoff game
today?
Right now?
No. Today. No, I'm not talking about, oh, he's 24, he'll get better or whatever. Right now, Ben Simmons, all-star, all-NBA, all-defensive team, and second in DPOY, and that ain't going to be the last time he does this. If he never gets better, that ain't going to be the last time he does any of those things. CJ McCollum is like seven injuries away from being the first-time all-star in either conference.
Yeah. I think for the fit and for what the Blazers need to do, that would be
Look, hold on. I don't want to get it convoluted with context, because context only helps my case more. I'm saying, ceteris paribus, as the economists say, all else being equal, same teams, same coaches, same cities, one of those guys is a lot better than the other guy. It's not a little. It's not like, oh, well, I could. No, it's not. It's not. Like, Ben Simmons right now can guard every motherfucker in the NBA.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right now, right? Yeah. You rebound. I put it more bluntly. Other than scoring, name something that CJ is better than Ben Simmons at.
maybe there's something. I can't come up with anything off the top of my head.
No one can, because there isn't. And again, that's not a knock on CJ, right? And Ben
scoring's
Simmons
important, though. Shooting has a disproportionate impact on the game.
It's all important. It's all important. All of it is important.
I'm just thinking about, I you know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of our mutual friend who has a certain connection to Dame and asking how excited he would be about that trade. I'm just curious what the response might be.
No, he absolutely would be ecstatic, because it's exactly what they need. And for everyone who says scoring is important, yeah, you know what else is important? Maybe not being the third worst defense in the history of the NBA. Maybe. I'm gonna throw that one out there wildly. Hey, you know, maybe they want to look at that. That's what I say. If you introduce context, then it's a landslide. Of course you'd rather have Ben Simmons if you're Portland. But I'm just saying, forget about their current situations, right? We say scoring is important, but being able to guard multiple positions at an elite level might be the most important. Why? Because I can get scorers. I can get shooters. How many guys can do what he can do? Him, Draymond, LeBron when he feels like it, Bam, who else?
I mean, at the same time, I got to say, it seems like shooting especially is rising in importance.
Ethan.
I mean, Kispert, okay, Ethan. I see Kispert Ethan. In the mock drafts. He's in the lottery.
Okay, Ethan. Here's why. Because the other guys are the rarest thing in the league. Well, I say shooters. Okay, this is me. Literally, I'm just looking at standings. I'm not looking at rosters. Look how many shooters I can name. Seth Curry. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Middleton, Brent Forbes, Trae Young, Kevin Herter. Let's see here, Duncan Robinson. I'm literally just going down the East standings right now, looking and thinking of names. Duncan Robinson, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Bradley Beal. What's the tall fuck from that stole all the money? Bertans, right? Brogdon, TJ Warren, Gordon Hayward.
Wait, why are we naming shooters? What's happening in this exercise?
Okay, so you say shooting is so important. Look how many shooters are out there. That's just me, I didn't even get to the West. That's just me naming. Okay, name guys that can do what Ben Simmons does, right? Because I can name guys that can do what Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, LeBron when he feels like it, Bam Adebayo, name another one.
Yeah. I mean, your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. Well, then we get to the other thing. Then we get to the other thing. Doc Rivers catching some heat. I was pretty surprised to see him say the thing that everybody ran with, that he didn't know if Ben Simmons could be the point guard in a championship team.
It
seemed like blame shifting, number one. Number two, I know people are saying that's honest, and I guess it is, but why wouldn't you just say it's within his control? I mean, that to me is coaching 101, to say, look, if you're disappointed with him, you can say it. And it's a way better thing to say than what he said, which is it's within his talent, it's within his capability, and it's on him to make it happen. It's so strange for him to say what he said.
You've completely missed the point. He has zero obligation to be honest with us. What? Does he understand? Is it a lie detector test? Say whatever the fuck. Why? All the NBA requires is that you be there and answer questions.
Yeah.
You could lie your ass off. Well, you be the media, and I'm Doc Rivers. Same thing. Tough game stuff. No, let's play this game. You're the media. Okay. I'm Doc Rivers.
Oh, I'll do the thing where you ask, where I ask softly because I'm a veteran reporter and I know that the coach is emotionally hurting. Doc, tough loss. In the aftermath, emotions are raw. But when you look at Ben Simmons, do you think that he can be a point guard on a championship team?
Well, Ethan, I got to tell you, I feel like we're a championship team right now. We just didn't get the job done. But, we all could have done better, and we're all going to go back and take a look at where we went wrong, and we'll be better. But, I have all the confidence in the world in Ben and Joel and everybody else. The end.
I'm sad you didn't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. It's a really handsome question there, Ethan.
Classic Doc.
Even if he literally closes that laptop and trade him right now, even if that's what's about to happen, you owe zero obligation to the media and to the public to be honest about your personnel decision or thinking or anything of that nature. You owe zero of it, because at the end of the day, if your stance is we can't win one with him, guess who got a lot much harder a job to trade Ben Simmons? Daryl Morey. Thanks a lot. You just fucked my world up. By the way, Daryl Morey didn't do any favors either. He fucking did the same shit the next day. I don't know. I'm like, why? Why do you feel obliged to these people?
Wait a second. Mr. I would trade for Ben Simmons right now. Aren't you worried about these red flags? Are you worried that the people around Ben Simmons aren't exactly sympathetic to the Ben Simmons case to the point where they're hurting his trade value? Isn't that a concern of yours?
It's a look. Sure. No. Oh no. Yeah, it's a concern of mine to the extent that I am going to lowball the fuck out of them now. You guys don't even fucking like him. Your best player, your head coach, and your GM. You all shat on him. Why am I giving up Damian Lillard now? Who is like a paragon, right? Yeah. If I'm Portland now, if I'm Neil O'Shea, I'm fucking fleecing the hell out of them. Because you all showed your hand. You're frustrated. You can't wait to get rid of the guy. All right, man, I'm doing you a favor. And that's the game. That's the leverage game because you positioned yourself. If I said, I'm not taking any calls on Ben Simmons, don't waste my time. What does that mean? Doesn't mean don't call me. It means if you call me, you better make that shit good. But if you're going to call me to bullshit, talk about, well, Anthony Simons is really like, all right, you want to play that game? Then don't waste my time. And that's the reality of the position that they as an organization, because it's not just Doc, Joel did it too, and more, you had the benefit, the luxury of a day later, didn't clean any of it up. He kind of added more to it with his comments. So they just put themselves in a tough situation. Now, for me, the guy trading who's lowballing is now beyond leverage and posturing and all that stuff, am I concerned? A little bit, but again, Ethan, even if this is as good as he is, he's still making my team so much better. You hope, fuck it, Dame will handle the rest. Well, Dame will fill in the blanks.
So let's get to what Doc's doing. I mean, a lot of people are having fun with the Doc playoff collapses. I guess what I'm wondering is this small sample size, or is there something Doc Rivers-y to the whole thing? Is there a Doc Rivers thing that is causing the collapses?
Look, man, to be honest with you, I was not aware of it until Zach Harper brought it. Hello? Oh, my fault. I actually hit
I thought you were doing a dramatic pause. No.
The funny thing is I did do a dramatic pause, but I also didn't notice I was muted. All right, let me do that again. Man, the funny thing is I didn't notice it until Zach Harper brought it to my attention like literally a week ago. Yeah, last Friday, Zach brought it to my attention. Like, look at how many times. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then we went through the number of times that Doc Rivers has been up in a series, has been up with an opportunity to eliminate, I think, and has lost. And when you go through the list one after another, you begin to realize, holy shit, like it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the sample size is, but he's got to be coming close to it.
I wonder if there's something to it. I wonder if it has anything to do with the throwing of Simmons under the bus. I wonder if Doc needs to improve in some respects. And, you know, he had that little comment about how Ty Lue wasn't going to be doing anything different with the Clippers because, you know, he was
not that he wasn't going to do anything with the Clippers. It's that he wasn't going to do anything with Paul George. Mm-hmm. Right. That was his point. His point was Paul George didn't play poorly in the playoffs because I wasn't trying things that were going to help him. Paul George didn't play well in the playoffs because Paul George didn't play well in the playoffs. Which seems to be a point that consistently evades Paul George. Another one in complete denial. Can never say, I didn't play well enough. I need to be better. I will be better. And that's it.
It's so simple. And by the way, fans love hearing that. It's fascinating. It's so fascinating how the protection of ego is counterproductive and accomplishes the exact opposite of what you want to accomplish, right? That you're protecting yourself from admitting that vulnerability. You're letting perfect be the enemy of good, I guess, and fans actually want that vulnerability. The guy who gets it is Embiid. I feel badly in a way for Simmons because Embiid is so good. He's so good. You know, that man, he's going to start hawking cheesesteaks and giving them out for free. He just understands how to, I'm not going to say play the Philly fan, because I don't think it's incredibly disingenuous, but he understands what they want and he gives it to them. He tells them that, hey, we came up short, but I left it all on the floor, even with a meniscus. Oh. I love you guys. You teach me how to be gritty. I'm editorializing at this point, but that guy gets it. No, and for Simmons, he just bears the brunt.
Yeah. Okay. So it's so interesting to me that the way you interpret it. First of all, I want to point out that Paul George and Simmons are not making perfect the enemy of good. What they're doing is the emperor's new clothes. What are you talking about? My clothes are great. And they think that if they shout it, accept it for us, the audience.
This coat makes Trae Young go 5 of 23.
Yeah. We're all children. We all see through it. And that's what makes it so ridiculous. Like in the end of Emperor's New Clothes, right, is that the child says he's naked and everyone realizes, oh, yeah, we've just been like going along with it because we're afraid of the emperor. But, yeah, he is naked. And then everybody like points and laughs, right? And the emperor's like, no, these are the finest garments and da-da-da. But, like, we all see through it. The illusion is broken. Paul George had the illusion of I am an elite superstar. I am playoff P. I hit game winners in my Gatorade commercials. And then someone did the digging like, this motherfucker never hit one in his career, college or pro. And it all shattered. But he's still holding on to, no, these are the finest garbs. So instead of just saying, you know what, man, I'm naked. I need to go get some clothes. And I think people would be like, yeah, we're going to still laugh, but it's not going to be as furious a spotlight. And also, anytime, like even when he has strings together a couple of good games, he has a game like last night, it all comes back. Again, not to go back to the alcoholic well too often, but it's like someone saying, oh, I've been sober for 10 years, but then you see him at a bar. Do you think, oh, he's had one drink and gone. Like, okay, he had a drink. No, we're going to be like, oh, he fell off the wagon. Like that's what people do because forfeited the benefit of the doubt of saying, maybe I just had a bad day.
I think it's even broader than that. I think that it's, again, it's the psychological need to not admit to it where, Dame Lillard, he had a lucky shot. That was a bad shot. It was a bad shot. Remember, Lillard shot over Paul George. Like, what's the need for that? You're not going to control the narrative. We're not going to reframe how we responded to that shot and go, oh, actually that was a bad shot. You know, actually Paul George was the hero in that situation, not Damian Lillard. It was Paul George. He played great defense. We should talk about that. That should be what we're going to remember. That's what's going to echo for all eternity when we play that highlight again and again. It's this idea that you can control the narrative in a way you can't.
There's a way to do it. There's a way, like if he had said, and this one's a little bit more complicated than like Doc Rivers, what I just did with Doc Rivers, because that one to me is fucking NBA 101. Just give them a basic boring ass answer. But for Paul George, I've thought about this, like what could he have said? And I'm guessing like it would have been something like that. What more could I do? What more could be done? I'm 6'9". Yeah. I've got long arms. I'm all over him. I'm not going to let him beat me with the drive, but I'm on him. Also, he's 30 feet away and I got a great contest on it. And then you shrug your shoulders like sometimes offense just be like great offense just beats great defense. And everyone would have like thought about all the things he threw on there, including I think like did Dame shoot well in that game?
I can't even remember. It was a few years ago.
Hold on. I'll find out right now. Hold on. Blazers, OKC, game 5, game winner.
The way that Dame waved by was very strange, by the way.
April 2019. Well, you know, the funny thing is he wasn't waving, allegedly, at the time. He wasn't waving at Paul George.
Who is he waving at?
Who do you think?
Westbrook?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. But it was a strange motion. Oh, okay. It wasn't really a wave. He was kind of gripping the air a little bit. He was cupping it.
Yeah, it was bye-bye. It was a bye-bye you do to a little kid because they enjoy the... Okay, yeah. So here we go. Box score. Damian Lillard in that game shot. Okay, he did shoot well. 17 to 33, 10 to 18 from three. either way.
Yeah, there's nothing you could do.
Either and nothing you could do narrative-wise. Scrub it. Yeah, okay. But either way, the point is, he could have made all of his points like nuance how good the defense was, and then just shrug and be like, "Them's be the breaks of the NBA," and people would have walked away. Talking about, fuck, yeah, he is a good defensive player. We would have obviously appreciated Dame more, but we also would have appreciated Paul George. But the moment you say it's a lucky shot or like it's a bad shot or whatever the fuck he called it, like you completely erased everything good that you've done and you just gassed him, right? And then obviously further foibles later don't serve to help you. The other thing I was going to point out that you said, Ethan, was that like Embiid does it well. He does it well, but I thought that press conference after Game 7 was one of the worst copping pleas, shoving people under the bus, pointing a finger at everybody else but himself.
And he does it so well.
I played well. Yeah, I suppose so.
I mean, that's a guy who's just sharp. He's just sharper. He's sharper than a lot of the other guys. He knows how to shape the narrative. He knows how to do it in such a way that we're not going to make that criticism. I mean, how many people were killing Embiid the next day? I didn't see it.
Nobody. But again, it goes back to Ben Simmons also like fucked up in a major way that erases the fuck ups that Embiid had, which he did. Like playing like shit in the fourth quarter for the third straight game, turning over
the Patrick and Ewing, the lumbering Patrick Ewing point blank miss.
Yep. Like Tobias Harris, who played like shit for most of that game. Like there are people who played like shit and not coached like shit, but all of that gets erased because a guy didn't dunk the ball when he was wide open. Not here to like make an excuse for it. Obviously, it's a pretty big fuck up, but it is still one fuck up. And everybody else had fuck ups too along the way.
I just feel like a lot of stars need media training, like the way NFL quarterbacks get it. It is drilled into NFL quarterbacks that you can never admit that your teammates fucked up. You just can't do that.
Oh,
you know, you threw 10 perfect passes that were dropped. You just have to say, hey, I just got to be better. You got sacked. You got sacked 15 times as your offensive line is totally incompetent. Just go, hey, I held the ball too long. You know, it's got to get out faster. And we're going to work on that. We're going to get in the film room. That is, if you notice what they say almost robotically, because A, you keep things good with your teammates, whom you rely on, and B, that's kind of what fans want to hear. They like that kind of accountability, even when sometimes it's too extravagant. I think sometimes Draymond, for instance, is too extravagant. It's all on me. I'm the reason we lost. Sometimes it could be too much, but fans love that, man. They love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do. And also, I won't say fans love it. It's just it doesn't trip any censors. Right? You give it to fans, they eat it up. No one complains about how bland it is. Nobody complains about how vanilla it is. Because it's like this is the meal. When you get a guy like Charles Barkley comes around and says whatever the fuck, you're like, ooh, this is tasty, and you recognize this is a treat. But the regular fare doesn't ever shake things up. Now the problem with Charles Barkley style, this is spicy, I like it, is you end up on the toilet shitting fire. That's what Joel Embiid, Doc Rivers, and Daryl Morey just did. They ate the spiciest fucking food and it tastes great, and now they're gonna shit flame balls in there. And you know, it's funny, media training, a lot of these people do go through media training. I don't know what kind, or do they not listen, or is the media training again is not good, but like they do go through it.
You know, it's probably way more important than they think it is as far as how their career is going to go, that aspect, because it does shape your reputation to a large degree, especially if you're in the spotlight. I've said it time and time again. Jamal Crawford, why doesn't everybody do what that guy does? Why didn't everybody do what he does? Fantastic. He just, these guys, a lot of people in media, let's face it, I'm a nerd, I could admit it. There's an aspect of, oh man, just a semi-famous person or a famous person gave me the time of day, that radically alters how I'm going to regard them, how I'm going to talk about them. That's how you can play a lot of the media. I'm not saying everybody. I'm not saying everybody is so easily influenced.
I think you need to explain to people who don't know. You said Jamal Crawford, and then like, what's Jamal Crawford's, like his, how he conducts himself? Go ahead, explain to the people.
He knows your name. He says hello. He asks about your family, what you're doing. And if you vote for him for something, he's going to reach out. He's going to thank you for it. He's going to convey legitimate gratitude for it, versus the interaction with most players where they don't ever, unless it's a very special circumstance, say, hey, good article about me, I really enjoyed it. They're really just going to get in your face because you said something bad. And that's going to be the only real interaction. Crawford, I mean, it's so basic. God, you could just run your local media coverage if you handle yourself like a Jamal Crawford or a Jared Dudley. And if you notice, I'm talking about two guys who have had long NBA careers where the overwhelming amount of coverage of them has been positive. And you could just do that for yourself, and it appears to cost very little.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, I think the important thing to point out is that like Jamal isn't manipulative or conniving or anything. He's merely burning the extra calorie to make sure you have good PR. Right? A lot of PR, like, it's like why Doc, everyone's like, oh, why does Doc Rivers get a pass? You know why? Because Doc Rivers does the thing that Ethan accused, you know, pointed out that I forgot to do in my Doc Rivers impression, which is compliment the question asker. Like, what does that mean? Anything? Turns out, like, when you're nice to people, they fucking feel a whole lot worse about shitting on you. And they'll couch it and they'll soften it and all that stuff. And so Doc does an incredible job of doing that, of you know, massaging the media so that, like, when you think of Doc Rivers, you have a good vibe about him.
Yeah. And, well, I think these players, they've had one tool to get praise and affirmation, and that's the thing they're going to focus on, and that's the game, and it should all take care of itself. And there's something fundamentally weird about thinking, I'm my own PR firm. Right, that's just something that doesn't seem obvious to a lot of guys.
Well, or worse, like I don't need to do that. I, you know, like there's a feeling that like I'm living my truth, and the reality is like it's not living your truth to just extend a modicum of kind of like niceness, right? Again, I'm not saying you should be nice to the media because they work hard. Don't get it twisted. I'm saying from a player's perspective, it's good for you. You do it because it's good for you, not because it's good. Much like giving to charity. A lot of people are like, oh, because I'm charitable. No, you do it because it's a great tax write-off. That's why.
Well, I almost think, because we always mention KD on this podcast, I almost think that he's so great that that's almost the challenge he's making for himself at some level of, I'm just gonna do terrible media relations, and I'm so great that in the end they will have to bow to me, and he might be that great. Yep. But that's one guy. That's one guy, and he hasn't accomplished it yet necessarily, but he might be able to because he's that great. It's not going to be the case for really anybody else, so it would make sense. I want to touch on that, though, with the Nets. I find their flame out interesting. You know, we've got two flame outs of overdogs, and the Sixers, we mock them, we jeer at them, we make memes about them. The Nets were basically assured a championship.
Yeah, the honorable death. Right.
Yeah, it's the honorable death. Even though they were assured a championship on a silver platter, it looked like they were going to waltz into it. They had a short offseason so they could conserve rest maximally, and they load managed more than any team in the history of the NBA, and yet could not win a championship because they were too injured. And somehow this all combines into something that we don't find issue with. That's curious, is it not?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, I don't know if they load managed. They were legitimately hurt for much of that year.
If anything,
they are a classic case of load management. Man, probably not a bad idea, huh? Right? You want to have your guys healthy. You probably should be monitoring how much you put on them. But I think also Kevin Durant reached the level that you just described, which is, I'm so great, even in defeat, no one could question how great I am.
Yeah, Dan Lebatard said he probably got more respect for this loss in the second round than for all the championships.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because people got a grasp of how hard it was. All of his teammates are hurt and gone. Da-da-da. Like, it's just him and Landry Shamet. Like that's when framed like that, when framed like that, it then becomes valorous, right? It becomes full of virtue. And the reality is, and this is what I said a long time ago about Kevin Durant when he won the first championship, doesn't fucking matter, because 30 years from now, no one remembers. Mm-hmm. Nobody remembers. Dude, we were talking about this the other day. Like, Jokic, first MVP to get swept in any playoff series since Magic Johnson in 88. You know why Magic Johnson got swept in 88?
Why?
Because every motherfucker was hurt, including him. He played like 1.5 games, I want to say. He played game one, and then he got hurt in, like, early in game two. And then I think he tried to give it a go in game three, played like 2 minutes, and then couldn't play. So he really played like 1.5 games. And Kareem was hurt, and Worthy was hurt. Like, everybody was hurt, right? And like, Pat Riley was hurt, and everybody was hurt, right?
Yeah.
And Jerry West was hurt upstairs. But the reality is, as we stand here today, 33 years later, nobody knows, nobody cares. Pistons won back-to-back championships. That's all we know.
What's weird is 89. That...
Magic in 89. I said 88 earlier. 89 is what I
mean. What's weird is that what he does in a more dire circumstance almost reveals what he was before when he wasn't getting credit for it, because it's the same guy, right? The Kevin Durant on the Nets, when everybody gets hurt, scoring like he did, it's the same guy who was unstoppable in those finals against the Cavs. He's just, you just don't have the excuse if you're a hater of saying, well, he's flanked by all that talent. That's the only reason this is happening. Mm-hmm. It's the same dude. And then curiously, you know, a Kevin Durant who, I'm not killing him for doing it, because I think he was exhausted. I think that your guy Steve Nash playing him 48 minutes, although that's probably a KD call.
Not 48. Not 48. 53.
I'm talking about game five, though.
Oh, game five. Okay, 48. Yeah.
That probably led to the burnout, but it is interesting. Nobody cares about 0-5 and overtime, right? It's, I'm not saying that we're wrong to dismiss it, because I think he was just gassed, understandably. I think that game winner, in many ways, near game winner, I should say, because his foot was on the line, that was almost evidence of it, because he couldn't blow by, right? He couldn't get past. I think it was PJ Tucker was guarding him on that one. I mean, it seemed like a situation where he could, but he kind of just went in a circle and had just enough to make it. He was exhausted, but nobody really cares about 0-5 overtime. And it's just so interesting that it kind of worked, the move to the Nets did in the end. Even if they didn't win the championship, it's worked reputationally for him. And that's just it's so odd.
And at the end of the day, isn't that all that matters? Because he got the championships. All that matters for him at this point is, like, will I be revered in the way that the other greats were revered? Hey, man, I mean, there's no bullshit about nothing, you know, fucking talk about me. Bro, I get it. Okay. I don't know you. Never met you, never talked to you. Okay? I'm just saying, like, you want to win championships and you want to be respected for it. You've won championships and now you are respected. And now, and maybe next year you can do both in the same year.
Yeah. I mean, they're an interesting case. Again, we look at the Sixers as blow it all up, everything needs to change. We look at the Nets as, snake bitten by injury, even though, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how those guys are going to hold up year after year. I mean, you've got dudes who can get injured. So I don't know. They look great at times and they looked like the prohibitive favorite. And there's something odd to me about it. There's something also, this is just an aside. I was thinking about even mentioned it in the column. There's something funny about the sugar high of the underdog, where in my mind, like so many people watching the game, I'm pulling for the underdog. I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, this is fun. The Hawks, they can upend the Sixers. Woo. Oh, come on, Hawks. Oh, this is fun, man. Like the Clippers without Kawhi and the ball's pinging around and they're five out and they're making Gobert look bad. Ooh, I want to see this. I want to see this. And then it's like it makes the next round worse. If you're a fan of these teams, yeah. I'm not trying to insult what your team did or say that we won't watch because your team made it. But Sixers Nets looks better on the marquee than Hawks Bucks, right?
I think this is the fun thing about right? This is what makes March Madness so successful. March Madness found the exact formula of early on upsets to get people excited, but then at the end of it, the right teams are there, right? So, fair Belmont beat da da da, but then our final four is like North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, and like UCLA, and so Duke and Syracuse. These are our like sacrifices early rounds, so that we could get the upsets required to make people feel like everything is up in the air and nothing is predetermined. But at the end, we get chalk because that's what we want.
Yeah, we want, I think if we're a hive mind, we want the underdog to almost do it. We want the kind of painful loss it looked like the Bucks were securing, that they were on their way to. That's kind of what we want in a way of, ooh, looks like the Bucks are actually going to do it. Oh, ooh, ooh, the Wile E. Coyote got tricked again. You know, that's kind of what we're in it for. I mean, God, I know this is old news now, but That Giannis, that little jump hook push shot against KD where he just rattles it in and just muscled. I mean, they were so dead in the water. If you had asked me at that point, what are the chances that the Bucks win this game before that shot? I'm just going, I don't know, like 1%.
That's what was so beautiful about that game 7, Ethan, was that usually what we get is the duel. He hits one, and then he comes back and hits one, and then he hits one, and then he comes back and hits one. And instead, what we got in that game 7 was the Nets hit 2, 3, 4 shots in a row. Like, all right, Giannis, it's going to be a long summer. And then all of a sudden, the Bucks hit a couple of shots. Oh, shit. Brooklyn, your time's up. And then they came, it was like these runs, these little mini runs going back and forth. I've never felt my energy momentum swing as wildly that many times at the end of a game as I did in that game 7. It was really cool to watch.
I can't remember a game quite like that, because you're right. It is usually a little more back and forth, but this was, oh, well, they're dead in the water. Oh, no, wait, they're dead in the water. Oh, no, wait, they're dead in the water. It was bizarre, totally bizarre. And it was, again, it was almost an underrated, painful loss for the Nets Nation that might exist. I don't know, maybe. I saw candidates for mayor of New York kind of acting as Nets fans for a little while. So maybe that's a thing now. But, you know, it's that was a crazy, crazy outcome. I guess we should end on game two, Clippers, Suns. I mean, everything's going to be about that last play. First of all, bounce off you. Do you have a problem with the end of NBA games taking as much time as a round of the U.S. Open?
Oh, you mean like 30 minutes for the last 30 seconds of a game or whatever it was, 90 seconds of a game?
Is that an issue? Is that an issue, or are we too NBA Twitter and it's not an issue and they're going to pull out the charts and they're going to say, well, all these people are tuning in because there's drama and the moments are pregnant with tension and Scott Foster is pointing at things and it's actually good and it's not that big a deal. What say you?
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I think there's two levels to this. Level one is like, did they turn the channel? No. All right, then I don't give a fuck, right? But I would imagine the goal of a good business, of a fine business, right? A high class business is not that I make you stay because you have to, but I make you stay because you want to, right? Meaning, I shouldn't want to point to our ratings because we held them hostage for 30 minutes looking at men looking at a TV screen. They should be like, fuck, man, this game was great. I'm not changing the channel. That should be the impetus, right? And for me, if we get things done faster, that shouldn't take away from anything.
It's a weird thing because the crazy, stupid replay review that I despise, we don't get the insane alley-oop play that we'll remember for eons without all of that bullshit, right? So it's a weird thing to unpack.
Yeah, but you know what's funny, Ethan, is it comes down to like I talked about this. I can't remember who I was talking to about the – oh, it's talking to Dan Lebatard today. And you can catch my appearance on Lebatard's show. Check that wherever you get podcasts. The out-of-bounds play that was ruled off of Booker when it was originally – it looked like Patrick Beverly. And if it hadn't happened in the last 2 minutes of the game, it would have been off of Beverly.
Yeah.
Right? But because we had the option to replay and
that's
because
– perfect being the enemy of good, by the way. That's,
right.
That
yes.
is the instance of that.
And because we have the luxury of these really high speed cameras that can slow it down frame by frame to the point where we've seen Beverly's hand is now not touching the ball, but Booker's hand is, we were able to ascertain that it was in fact off Booker. Now here's my thing: the call didn't come from Scott Foster. The call came from Secaucus. Secaucus was the one that said off of Beverly. Which is what I've been begging for a while, is the caucus needs to make these calls. But it can't take the same amount of time that it would take Scott Foster. The ball went out of bounds before they even asked for a replay. You need to have some fuck in there already reviewed just in case. Just like they did us video coordinators where we had to have 6 million scouting reports just in case we end up playing the Blazers in the first round and not the Spurs or the Sonics or whoever. You need to have – you got all these refs ain't doing shit, right? The ones that aren't on playoff detail, fly them all to Secaucus. Do them in shifts. End of the game. If we've got these things that even if they haven't called for it yet, goddamn pick a name. Haywood Workman. I was going to say Violet Palmer, but she doesn't ref anymore. What's any one of these people.
Whatever happened to her?
She retired. I think she works in the league, like referee operations. She's an exec. She's a suit. Yeah. So, but the idea is that these people are there. We have them on call. Have them like game by game, like, or maybe for the week or whatever, however you want to do it. Have them sit there. Ball goes all out of bounds. Yo, Haywood, get on it right now. He's there with a video guy and they're running. They're looking for it. And the off chance that Scott Foster says, all right, let's check it. Already checked the dude. It's off of Booker. We need to speed this shit up. We need to speed this shit up. It cannot be a case of real time. We are waiting just like everybody else. It has to be faster.
I agree with that, but I also wonder why the hell do we have this in the first place? I'm going to sound like an old man.
We know why we have it. We know why we have it.
I said it. Why do we have it?
We have it because we can't have a situation where the viewing audience of 70 million or however many people saw it, but the three guys who needed to see it could not see it. Like, you can't have that. Like, that cat's out of the bag.
I disagree, you know, because look, I'm going to sound like an old man. I existed during the 1990s. They got calls wrong sometimes. Sometimes buzzer beaters. Sometimes Reggie Miller's finger was on the ball before the light went off, or after the light went off, I should say. And we lived. We all lived. People were mad. They argued about it. They were angry. Maybe they accused the NBA of some sort of bias. I don't know, but we all lived. It is not traditional to basketball to do this, and if it was good for the entertainment product, then we would see that in the numbers. I don't think we've seen growing numbers. I think I might have written a thing or two about that.
Either, like, we live with it because we didn't have another option available. Much like people in the 1700s live with walking up 7 flights of stairs to get to the top. And then someone invented the elevator, and nobody wants to fucking use stairs, not even to go downstairs from the second floor. Why is that? Because we know it exists. We know that option is available. And
let's go back to when we took the stairs and we were skinny, rather than right now where we're all fat because we're taking an escalator or whatever the hell. I have had the same position on this from the moment it's begun, in part because I see the slippery slope, in part because I see the mission creep that, well, you start with this and, well, you can't not replay that, and you're going to replay that, but you're not going to replay this, and you've got to expand it, and we need more time on it. It just never ends, and it seems to me to be a fundamental misunderstanding of why, say, football is popular, to look at the least fun aspect of an NFL football game and try to steal that. It just – it's enough. I wonder at what point they can say this is all too much. We're spending way too much time on it. It alters the way the game is. We've got this crazy situation where people try to get the refs to do it to concoct a timeout.
So, okay. So that's a conversation with that. By the way, the NFL, last I checked, also has video replay.
But the NBA looked at the NFL's popularity and they stole the one thing that has nothing to do with why it's popular.
But I'm just, it's not, they don't, but the video replay is not for popularity or unpopularity. That's not. That wasn't
the integrity of the game.
It's for the integrity of the game, right? And that's what the point of that is. But as far as I got sidetracked. Someone sent me an email.
You were talking about the timeout, the concocted timeout.
The concocted timeout. All right. So we've seen this before, not with regards to this particular situation, but when there is some sort of stoppage where the refs stopped the players from walking over to their bench to talk to the coaches. That's what needed to happen. That's what needed to happen last night. They don't have a timeout. They should not get to behave as though they do have a timeout. So you got to have the players off the court, and you got to have the or on the court, and you got to have the coaches off the court. And the only person that can come up is maybe a water boy. Water boy with a towel, a locker room attendant with a towel and a Gatorade or whatever. But there needs to be no interaction. Look, it happened. I'm not here to like adjudicate it after the fact, but that's one of those things moving forward the league needs to look at, because that's not fair, right? To be able to concoct something because of a timeout. You know, it's kind of like, do you remember, Ethan, you might be young. You remember what the penalty used to be for calling a timeout that you didn't have? You know what the penalty is now? You know what the penalty is now?
What is it?
All right, so the penalty used to be it was a technical foul. But you know what happened after they shot the technical?
What?
You got your timeout. So you would call a timeout, and then you like everyone would go to the bench and start going, and then someone would say they don't have any timeouts left, and the ref would call technical foul, and someone from the other team would go shoot the ball, shoot the technical, and then they would literally advance up to that half court. So it's like you basically paid a point penalty for getting that timeout.
So it reminds me of my finding that there were six men at the end of the 1993 or 94, I don't remember, Rocket Sonic series. And that actually would have been a great strategy because it would have just been a technical foul penalty.
It was 93. Yeah.
It's 93.
So,
yeah.
Like that's the craziness of it is that you used to basically pay a tax like and get your timeout anyway and move forward, right? And so they got rid of it. And the way they got rid of it is like, now it's a technical foul and you lose possession. So don't fucking try this anymore. It's the same thing. We can get rid of it. Like, we know that people are subverting the letter of the law to use it as an opportunity to get something they don't have any more of. So all you got to do is just stop them from doing it. We're reviewing the play. Cool. Players on the other side of the floor. Literally clear across the floor. But they want to rest, sit on the ground. Like, because it's not a timeout. It's not a timeout. It is not, this is live, technically live basketball. So they should not be able. Now, if the coach wants to throw hand signals or scream across the court, he's free to do that. But drawing up something and showing it to him, that should be off limits.
Yeah. I don't like the fake timeout. I do like the quirky rule that you can do the goaltending. From out of bounds. Oh. It seems like one of those. It seems quirky. Like the movie Dodgeball, where the husky mustachioed ref goes, wait, it says here in the rule book that you can, it feels like one of those very random rules, but I endorse it.
No, it's not obscure or quirky. It's like, you got to think about it. What is goaltending? Well, someone shot the ball and it's still in the cylinder, so it might go in on its own accord, but we don't want defenders to knock it out. B, offensive players to knock it in. We don't want it to be interfered with. We want to let it have its opportunity. But if I'm passing the ball from a dead play out of bounds, it's not eligible to be shot. If Jay Crowder just shot and hit it, that point doesn't count. So if it's not a live shot, hence there's no goaltending. It's actually the most logical rule in basketball. And so that's why I'm like surprised anyone would have an argument or a complaint about it.
How would you feel about a rule where Crowder could shoot that?
I think I'd rather have it as is. I'd rather have the opportunity to have DeAndre Ayton fly in and dunk that shit than trust Jay Crowder's ability to hit that shot.
It's like a free throw from out of bounds. Yeah. Hopefully DeMarcus Cousins would do a better job guarding
But you know what that is, though? You know what that is? You, as someone who's covered the Warriors so long, you should have seen
that's it. That's the Bogut.
What that is, that's gravity. That is the gravity of Devin Booker. So Devin Booker, what should have happened, right, is Cousins should have been angled to protect the basket. either Batum and Jokic, not Jokic, Batum and Zubac, I mean, should have switched, or or Batum should have bumped Ayton. What ends up happening is they don't switch. Batum stays hugged up on Booker, and Cousins is guarding the 3-point line.
I don't know if I'd call that hugged up, though. he was not too connected. I don't know if Batum covered himself in glory. I agree with you that Booker, the threat of Booker, had something to do with why Batum was not reacting and responding to the threat. But I was, though, referring to the Bogut is in. The Warriors, in a possession like that, would put Bogut in. And what Bogut would do is he would jump really high and wave his arms like crazy. You look at Cousins guarding the out of bounds, he's not even jumping. He's just kind of, you know, he's kind of flailing a little bit, but he obviously had not been prepped on how to do that or didn't know how to do that. And it seemed like at that point, why have him there versus you'd be better off with Rondo or just, hell, double team Booker then.
You have him there because you want size on the inbound, but you don't want clueless size on the inbound, right? and this is where it's important. Like, someone told me this. I can't remember which coach told me this. Like, you got to say the shit in the huddle, and then when they're breaking out the huddle, you got to know which guys you got to grab and say the shit again to.
That's
because they'll look
right
at you
there.
Like, got it, and then they run out there and they don't know what they're doing. So, like, it's one of those things where you got to grab them, like, no, you got to, like, this is, you can't give up this. Got it, right? But then here's the thing. They do that, and then Booker pops out and he hits a three. And what are we saying? Oh, you left the best player in the game or on the court open to hit the shot. It highlights
but Cousins,
how fucking
but Cousins
hard
doing
it.
His job there costs nothing. That costs nothing for Cousins to do his job right there. Yeah.
Theoretically, Zubac and Batum, they should be able to handle it.
Yeah. It's just
without Cousins denying the pass. You know, what's funny. I brought it up to Dan. It reminded me, do you remember the game winner? It was a regular season game, I think, that the Warriors had against the Clippers where Draymond had the layup and Iguodala's passing. Because Draymond set the screen.
Yeah.
And Jordan pops out to greet Curry and whoever's guarding Curry, was like locking and trailing over, and then the guy guarding the inbound jumps to the 3-point line. And because Iguodala looked that way, and then Draymond slipped, and Iguodala has it, Draymond lays it in, like, game over, Warriors win. And I said, the crazy thing about that is it's not going to say anywhere in the box score that Steph Curry made all that shit happen. And last night, I thought Devin Booker did the same thing.
Well, I think for that play, I think Draymond and Andre obviously discussed it before, but they loved that one. They love that. Andre loves, I think that was an Andre invention, and he loves when he can, yes, Steph made that all happen, but I think that was from the mind of Andre, and I know what you're talking about right there. I'm trying to remember what play that was a variation of. Doesn't matter. Who cares?
So they audibled that one.
Yeah, they audibled that one. Oof. That came from Andre.
Nice.
So some good Warriors victories at the Staples Center. We did not talk Warriors in this
Ethan,
one, but
real quick, just to point out, that's why having high IQ players is the biggest. You always talk about what's the new market inefficiency, IQ.
Yeah,
that's the market inefficiency.
Yeah, God, they can do so much. They can manipulate the game. They can understand how guys are playing Steph. I'm thinking about how Draymond would understand how exactly they're trying to chase Steph off screens to then do his screen according to where they think the screen is going to be. I mean, there's just so much within the game of it. And we will talk about that in the future. I mean, I think we need to do the next podcast down the line. This has been excellent as always. We always love when you're coming by. I don't want to, get your head too big, but you are a podcaster extraordinaire. Is there anything you would like to plug right now? Anything at all?
Cinephobe, the podcast with Zach Harper and I, watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain whether they are accurately poorly rated or perhaps didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts. This week, we review the 1998 movie, and I use the word movie very loosely this time, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's right. Marvel made a Nick Fury movie in 1998, and they cast not Samuel L., but David Hasselhoff in it. It's just as hilarious as you think it might be. Give it a listen on Cinepub. Also, patreon.com/countthedings. That's where we put all our exclusive content for our Patreons. If you're a subscriber, you get such great content as the Cinephobe Overflow episodes. Excuse me, the Cinephobe Special Edition episodes. We do one once a month, at least once a month. This month, it was Father's Day, and so we did Daddy's Home 2, starring Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, John Lithgow, and apparently the uncanceled Mel Gibson. Again, the episode is hilarious, even if the movie isn't. Go ahead and check out Cinephobe and check out the Patreon, patreon.com/countthedings. And finally, of course, Meadowlark Media, the Dan Lebatard Show, Lebatard and Friends, all those things. Make sure you're following all of them. I make frequent appearances over there. I work there, and you'll enjoy it.
Thanks so much. Everybody give a thank you to Jade. He's been working overtime in these playoffs, making these podcasts amazing. Check out my work on The Athletic. I will have an article on Friday talking about what's actually going on with TV viewership. It's what I talk about every Friday, but this Friday I think will be especially interesting just because, oh my God, the propaganda. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. But we'll get into that later. Stay safe out there. Enjoy the postseason. See you, everybody.
Yeah, how many stay safe. Enjoy the postseason. Make sure you eat your vitamins. Get
Mark Cuban's lying.